Please lower your head and watch your step while boarding.
Welcome to the Attractions Podcast. You are all clear for dispatch. Have fun.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 119 of the Attractions Podcast, sponsored by Destinations with Character Travel. I'm Brittany.
And I'm Seth.
And we're here to talk to you about the latest and greatest in theme park news and more, as well as what's going on in our own lives. And in this episode, instead of talking about the news and stuff, because it's the holidays, we decided we were going to do a 2021 year in review, where we talk about all the big things that happened over the past year. And if we forget your favorite big thing that happened, we're sorry in advance.
It was a big year in the world and yes. In the world of theme parks. And if we fit in every single thing, we would be here until 2023. So
honestly, yes, when I was compiling the list for everything I was going through, and like, oh my god, so many things happened, whether it was just like minor, like a character started to do meet and greets again, or a parade was announced to return, that kind of thing, versus like entire attractions and restaurants opening fully. So much happened in a pandemic year, of all things. It's been wild.
Yeah, it's been a roller coaster, or maybe a motion simulator, depending on your taste.
Complete with the motion sickness, yes. I think. So let's just get started with probably the biggest thing that we'll talk about this entire time, is that we saw the theme parks reopen fully.
Yeah. I mean, I think the we can all agree that the biggest story of last year was theme parks shutting down.
Yep.
You know, here in Orlando, we had stuff reopening in 2020. But for a lot of the country and a lot of the world, things, you know, stayed shut, most notably Disneyland out in Anaheim. But we're back at the place where pretty much everything is reopened. There's still places when, you know, there's a new variant or a flare up where things shut down temporarily. But for the most part, all of Disney parks worldwide are back in operation. Same with Universal and most of the other major chains.
Yeah. And this includes internationally as mm-hmm. well. I mean, we all have talked so many times about the struggles that the Asia parks in particular yep. have had with Hong Kong Disneyland and Universal Studios Japan being the two ones mm-hmm. that got dealt the shortest of straws.
Yeah, you know, poor Super Nintendo World, because they barely got a chance to be open before they got shut down and then reopened and then paused again. And it's been a lot of back and forth. It seems like we're kind of through that now, but, who knows, by the time you listen to this, with the Omicron variant, who knows what could happen in 2023, but, 2022. I'm already jumping a year ahead. Who knows what could happen in 2022? For right now, yeah, 2021 was the year of things opening back up.
Yeah. And then I think probably the next biggest thing we can talk mm-hmm. about, and I have a visual aid in the form of an article, is that Disneyland shocked the world when they closed down their annual pass program.
Yeah, I mean, I think in retrospect, we can see this as a case of Disneyland taking advantage of the pandemic and the closure to do something that they'd probably been thinking about internally for years. Disneyland annual pass program, I think by any measure, we can all agree, had gotten out of hand. They had literally, you know, over a million people who are annual pass holders. And out of those 999 million of the, or 999,000 of them, sorry, I felt like they owned the park. It created a lot of issues, I think, for Disney in terms of managing their demand and being able to provide an excellent experience to people who had flown in from around the country, around the world for, a once-in-a-lifetime visit versus the people who basically used Disneyland as their own private playground, you know, popping in anytime they want. Something had to change, Disney pretty much did the most radical change they could by killing the program altogether, basically kicking everyone out, and then saying, okay, now we've got a new program that you can buy back into where you're going to pay more and get less.
Yep. And now you can't even get that top tier pass
anymore.
Nope. And I think the SoCal level is also not
available. They've actually blocked multiple levels. There's one level that I believe is still available, but even if you purchase that, there's no guarantee that you're going to be able to use it when you want to use it because of the Park Pass reservation system.
Yeah. And in theory, from like a, if I try to view it from Disney's perspective, it makes sense. You know, you limit the capacity of people who have annual passes to make lines a bit shorter to offer less of a congested experience. But in all the vlogs that I've watched, the park is still like wall to wall packed with people. And instead of controlling that per se, it seems like they've just made the former annual pass holders, now Magic Key holders, just mad about not being able to go whenever they want. But also, should they go whenever they want?
Yeah, I mean, it's you. They've created they created over decades this, you know, I hate to use the word entitlement because, you know, if you purchase something, you are entitled to use it.
Yeah.
But, you know, the sense of ownership among Disneyland annual pass holder fans in particular cut both ways. They were both Disney's biggest supporters and biggest critics. And, you know, increasingly just kind of Disney being unable to manage or manipulate or control this mass of people the way they wanted to. And, you know, the pandemic let them kind of hit the reset button and, you know, clear out the old ways of doing things. And, you know, if they had tried making this shift before without the excuse of the closures, I think it would have been a lot harder. It still wasn't easy, and they still got a lot of blowback. But I do think that this pandemic provided the perfect cover for them to do something that they'd probably been planning on for a long time.
Yeah, and I think now definitely I feel like the complaints are still there, but they're not as loud. Like people are still annoyed that they can't just be like, oh, let's go to Disneyland tonight for dinner or something. But I don't know. It's tricky to discuss or like definitively say whether or not you should be able to just drop in whenever you want, you know. So it's definitely a topic that we will no doubt be discussing well into the future, especially with Walt Disney World having paused their annual pass sales as well, which they recently went through a shift in changing theirs to different tiers. Where only one of them was available for out-of-state guests. The rest are only in-state people.
Yeah. Yeah, the you know, right now they're in a pause, and I've heard that pause could be lifted anytime. But, you know, the idea that people who come from out-of-state or people who buy into the Disney Vacation Club being blocked from being able to purchase annual passes, if that goes on for too long, that's also going to get a lot of angry people.
Yeah. Our next topic that was super major for 2021 and something that I never thought would happen, to be quite honest, is that Disney updated their Disney Look program. And if you don't know what Disney Look is, it is a guideline of appearance standards for cast members that kind of fit the classic respectable American look, no tattoos visible, no piercings in the face. Short
for those of you listening on audio, Brittany used air quotes for respectable.
I did respectable, because who's to say what's respectable and what's not? Men or male identifying people had to wear male costumes, and same with female identifying people. You could not swap. You could not wear makeup if you were male or male presenting. You could not have painted fingernails in certain colors. Certain hair colors were also out, and lengths as well was also deeply frowned upon. And I think this was also kind of a COVID thing, because while we experienced the pandemic, there was kind of like a revolutionization of the American people as far as like what they're willing to put up with at work and what kind of values they want their companies to stand for. And Disney kind of responded to this by saying that all sorts of things that they had previously not allowed and would make you wear long sleeves to cover up or make you use fingernail polish remover to get your nail polish off or make you dye your hair because they didn't like the color that it was are now allowed. And this was major for a lot of people because this allows so many people who wouldn't have applied for Disney before to be able to hold a job there if they wanted to.
I think there are two sides to this coin, depending on whether you're cynical or not. The cynical financial motivation is the labor market is getting tighter and tighter. It is harder and harder for employers to find employees willing to work the kind of jobs for the kind of pay that Disney is offering. That's why you see starting pay going up, but it's why you also see more intangible changes to the job, to their work environment, in order to attract people who, before, you know, either felt closed out or literally were closed out from being able to take these jobs. So, purely financial motive on one side, they got to keep these positions staffed. But I, you know, I also like to look at it. This is kind of part of the inclusivity or inclusion key that Disney added to their standards. You know, they've always been about safety, courtesy, show. What's the fourth key?
Efficiency.
Efficient, yeah. but they've added a new key that's right at the heart of it, which is inclusion and making people feel represented and welcome, no matter, you know, what their identity or where they come from. And I, you know, I like to look at this as part of that, that, you know, sending a message that, you know, people who look a certain way aren't part of Disney, aren't part of the magic, is, you know, a message that I don't think they want to be sending anymore. And for those of you, who are screaming at your podcast, that this is not what Walt would have wanted, that Walt would be rolling over his grave. May I just point out that Walt was a walking violation of his own policy, wearing a mustache that was completely against the rules for his, you know, employees, but it was okay for him. You know, some of your favorite Imagineers, you know, Joe Rohde, have long been in flagrant violation of Disney's policies. And so, you know, I support the frontline people. You know, obviously this doesn't mean that Cinderella is going to show up with, you know, a full sleeve of tattoos and, an eyebrow piercing. Entertainment, roles are still separate from this. But you know, I don't have a problem with a person who's loading me on a ride or serving me food, having an extra earring or, you know, having a clothing that matches their gender expression.
Yeah.
That's not ruining my vacation and it's making their life a lot easier.
I remember the day that this new rule was put in, like made active, and someone was posting pictures of Main Street where a Main Street Ops cast member had an arm tattoo, like about the same size as mine. And they just looked so happy to not be wearing long sleeves in 80,
exactly.
90 degree heat.
Absolutely.
And that just made me so happy because that tattoo doesn't say anything about their character or what kind of job they are able to do or how hard they're able to work. And now they can just not have to think about it. It doesn't reflect on their work at all. They don't have to wear extra clothing to cover it up. It just made me happy. And also, this was specific to my time at the Pirates League. Our costumes were very gendered. The women or female identifying cast members would have to wear skirts and corsets, and the male identifying cast members would have to wear pants and sort of puffy pirate shirts.
Boo, no fair.
And I remember
I want to wear a corset.
They had real like plastic boning in them too. Like they
Ouch.
Weren't just fake.
Ouch.
And I remember it was just so people would be like tripping or getting tangled up in their skirts all the time. So a few of my fellow cast members went to costuming and got the male Pirates League costumes and wore them and were given so much crap for it. And now, if Pirates League were still open, rest in peace, they would be able to wear whatever costume they wanted on both ends of the spectrum. So it's not just about identification, it's comfortability. You know, some people don't like to wear skirts, but all of the female gendered costumes are skirt based for the most part. So that's also great to see as well.
Yeah. Newsflash, we're not in the 1950s. Women can wear pants. It's okay.
Our next thing is we had a bunch of rides and beyond rides, like restaurants and more, get refurbed or reopen or open for the first time ever. And it being a pandemic year, when things were already tough to see both Disney and Universal and parks around the world kind of participate in this and open up new stuff is insane. No one expected them to do anything, and it feels like they managed to squeeze a lot into this year, both because of the delayed timelines that COVID caused and just general, you know, working hard to get stuff open.
Yeah, we've got a long list. Should we do quick takes on each of these? Yeah.
Okay, starting off with Snow White's Enchanted Wish. Have you had a chance to ride this yet?
I did, and I really enjoyed it.
I do too.
I still like Pan and Alice better. But it's way better than Pinocchio ride. They did a great job with integrating new scenes and lots of projection mapping, but still keeping my favorite moments like the witch in the mirror. I think it was a good enhancement, and it's definitely the big thing is if you're a parent, the old version could scare the poop out of a kid.
I'm still traumatized from it.
And this one still has a few really brief spooky moments with the witch, but for the most part, it's nothing that kids can't handle now. It will not traumatize kids the way it has for generations.
The old one was genuinely scary. You would have to go into the forest, and the witch would come out in a little boat, and the trees would be all scary. Yeah. Go look it up if you've never seen it before.
I grew up with the original one at the Magic Kingdom, which the scariest version of all, and would end not with a happy ending, but with the witch dropping a rock on your head and killing you.
Nice.
So, therapy for years. So I'm glad that a new generation of kids will not be scarred by this ride.
Yes. We also got a refurbed version of the Jurassic Park turned world Flume ride over at Universal Studios Hollywood. I did not get to ride this when I was over there, sadly, but videos, it looks incredible.
Yeah, I got to ride it first in 2019 when it kind of reopened as Jurassic World, but it wasn't totally done. And it was solid, but it had some flaws. And I got to go back and ride it again in 2021, and they fixed everything that I complained about. It's really a huge upgrade over the old version, and I really wish that they would refurb the one in Orlando to bring it up to the standard, because the Indominus Rex animatronic at the end of the ride, I'm sure it's a cousin of the one that they've got out in Beijing. It's just the most incredible dinosaur animatronic I've ever seen on a ride. And it gives that ride a whole new lease on life. It makes ours look really sad here in Orlando.
All right, Universal Orlando, if you're listening,
please, please,
please. Another Universal Hollywood. This one is brand new. It's the Secret Life of Pets Off the Leash. It opened back in April.
Have you done this one?
I did, and it was so charming.
It's fantastic. It is really, you know, it kind of blew my mind the way Disney has been going more and more towards screen-based things, and Universal comes out with a ride with like 100-something animatronics and incredibly detailed sets, and it's really like an old-school dark ride. I almost feel like this is Universal's version of the Haunted Mansion, just in terms of the sheer scale of characters and little sight gags and things that you can look at going, you know, multiple times. I even love the queue. It's got some fantastic animatronics in the queue. The only thing I don't like about this is the restraint system is awful. I don't understand why this couldn't be an Omnimover attraction like Disney uses all over the place. Instead, it staples you into these tiny seats with a really restrictive restraint system that, you know, prevents some of the little kids who would enjoy this the most from doing it. And it also makes loading people with mobility issues really, really challenging. It's such a shame that they did that, because it for me, it really hurts what is a 5-star ride.
Yeah, I will say, speaking to mobility issues, when I rode this, I was in a wheelchair for that entire day at Universal Hollywood. Mm. And getting through this queue, while it is incredibly detailed and awesome, it is so tight that the chair could barely fit in some places.
It's got like a quarter inch clearance on some of those turns.
Yeah.
You know, it's
and also just like getting through the doors, because the entrance, I think we have a photo of it in here. It's just maybe we don't. It's just a regular size door, like a regular width door. And to exit the ride, it's also a similar door, but they don't have like an auto accessibility, like button you could push that opens the door automatically, which was a huge struggle for me in the chair. So that would be the only thing, is if you have a scooter or you're in a chair and you have to transfer out, to just be aware of it, you know, because you're going to basically have to clear out the area next to you to be able to go through this queue by yourself and just kind of create like a conga line behind you, and also maybe get someone to help you open the door.
Yeah.
But other than that, it's a wonderful ride.
It's a hassle, but it was worth it.
Totally agree. And then, of course, we finally got Avengers Campus back in June. And I remember pre-COVID when they put out all of the marketing materials and they were like, here are all the characters and all the food and all the merchandise. And then they were like, just kidding, we're not opening this for like a year.
Yeah. It was a big build up and a tease and then a long pause, kind of like the blip. Yeah. It was like Thanos just snapped the whole place out of existence and then brought it back. But you know, I got to see this over the summer, and you know, as someone who's a fan of the Marvel stuff at Islands of Adventure, you know, it's definitely a more modern style of theme park design. There's some great, you know, design work that went into the area. It just never clicked with me emotionally as a place I wanted to just hang out. There's no shade. No. It's a very kind of industrial, kind of cold feeling, emotionally cold but physically very hot. And you know, there's some great little live entertainment stuff. I absolutely love the Warriors of Wakanda training session that they do. I think that's one of the best street shows at Disney. But for me, the heart of the place, the Spider-Man attraction, you know, it's a more modern version of Toy Story Midway Mania. It's the Legoland Ninjago ride, except it actually works. But it's not something that I'm going to ride over and over for the next 20 years the way I do the one, the Spider-Man ride at Islands of Adventure.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of my benchmark for a superhero ride, and anything that does not live up to that, it's going to ultimately be a little disappointing to me.
Yeah. And I mean, this land also includes Guardians of the Galaxy Mission Breakout, but that's kind of old hat at this point, because they opened that in like 2017.
Still a great ride. And I think if they had built that as that ride from scratch and no one knew the history of Tower of Terror, people would be saying that that's, you know, a world-class e-ticket. I still love it with the variations of the different songs and everything. But it is something that, you know, it's kind of like when they opened Harry Potter at Islands of Adventure and it had Dragon Challenge. It's like, well, we already knew that roller coaster. You know, we're not going to spend a lot of time talking about it because it was already there.
Yeah. And then we also have an e-ticket that we're waiting on.
You might be waiting a long, long time.
If
under
ever.
Bob Chapek, yeah, you might be waiting a long time.
The last I checked Google Earth, the area behind it that should be a show building is a parking lot.
Yeah.
But it's the building where if you've caught any of the sort of themed stage fight moments, I think there's currently a Hawkeye Christmas yep. theme show happening on select days there now.
Yeah, they swap out the characters. It's pretty much the same choreography. They changed the dialogue a little. I think they added some Christmas tinsel.
Nice.
It's still one of the cheesiest, most embarrassing things in any major theme park.
Yeah.
The only thing more cringe-worthy than that is the dialogue for the Spider-Man bit that they do before the animatronic flies.
The tumbling.
Oh my gosh.
Second-hand embarrassment. But I will say to Avengers Campus's credit is that it is great at promoting what is currently available on Disney Plus. They have really been pushing and pushing content by offering the most current and updated mm-hmm. character meet and greets I've ever seen at a Disney park. Like when Loki was airing over the summer, every week we would get a new variant of Loki.
I was out there while that was going on and got to see President Loki morning after that episode aired. And that was awesome. I'm just disappointed that they didn't have a walk around alligator Loki.
What's his name? Richard Grant.
Richard Grant. Old Loki.
Oh my God. As old Loki, where he's just like curmudgeonous and hateful. I would love that so much. I did get to see Zombie Captain America.
Oh, yeah.
Used to promo Marvel's What If. And that was grotesque and scary and disgusting and so unlike Disney, but so refreshing at the same time that I don't know if they'll ever do anything like that again.
Oh, I hope he gets awesome. I hope he gets hauled out of the closet at some point.
I wish you could have seen him up close because like the mouth application was like glistening, like wet looking, and they had lots of like squish, like ripping and tearing noises in his entrance.
They're going to be doing a special villains night in 2022. It sounds like that might be a good time to pull him out of the storage.
Do it. And then of course we could not go without mentioning Jurassic World Velocicoaster. Some say it's the best coaster.
Just the best ever. I don't know if we can go as far as saying the best ever, but it's been my favorite ride since it opened. I can't get enough of it. It's definitely my favorite new attraction to open in 2021. And you know, this really, between this and Hagrid's, Universal has just been on a roll when it comes to themed roller coasters. Disney's got to really step it up with Guardians of the Galaxy and Tron. I'm hoping they're both going to be great, but they got a real hurdle to compete with. This Velocicoaster is just kind of a perfect symphony of theming and thrills, and it's so completely re-rideable. It's intense but smooth, and I just every time I get off, I just want to get right back on.
Do you still keep up with how many times you've been on?
Oh, I gave up on that a long time ago. I mean, I'm well over two or three or four dozen. I don't think I've hit 100 yet, but I'm not a good credit counter. I'm sorry. After I had that first day where I rode like a dozen times back to back, as you know, my brain has been scrambled. I haven't really been able to do higher math.
I don't know how your stomach survived that day.
It was I because I didn't eat any churros until after.
Smart. That's how. And then we also got a complete overhaul of the Jungle Cruise at both Disneyland and Walt Disney World to make it a bit more socially appropriate. Mm-hmm. Got rid of Trader Sam, changed up the totem pole sequence, and got rid of the villagers as well.
Yeah, there was a lot of stuff in there that hadn't aged well. And I'm not just talking like in terms of political correctness, but like those figures didn't really look great. They didn't appeal to people anymore. The jokes that went around them were pretty lame.
Yeah.
Now, you know, the skippers have a lot of new material, which is fun. I think the way they added in the sunken boat that's been taken over by monkeys is a really well-staged scene. You know, it's really got kind of that Mark Davis flair for expressing character through pose and through limited action that really helps tell a story. You know, I've done the new versions in both coasts, plus the Jingle Cruise. They got to do some Christmas decorations on the new scenes too. And you know, I think overall it's successful. It's still the Jungle Cruise. You know, I don't think anyone is. You know, there was a time where they talked about adding The Rock to the Jungle
No.
Cruise. Be thankful, you know, that didn't happen. It's not, you know, it's not like what they did to Pirates of the Caribbean. It's still the ride that people have loved. It's just a few more people are able to love it now.
I will say I've been on the Disneyland refurbed version, but not the World version yet. They did have a rock joke that they added in. It was like, there's the rock. And there's the Jungle Book, and that was basically the extent of it.
I mean, you know, they're you just got to take it for granted that they're gonna add a joke like that.
Boo. I boo you.
Right. That was my one of my bolder attempts at comedy.
I'm going to kick you off of this recording if you say one more pun, I swear.
I'll turn off my mica.
Anyway, we also got a clone of the Lego Movie World opened at Legoland California Resort back in May. This is an entire land themed to the films The Lego Movie and The Lego Movie 2, the second part.
I enjoy the version that's in Florida. I haven't been out to the one in California in a long time, but it's nice that they're keeping that one up to the standard of the East Coast.
Yes, I think they're almost exactly the same, except they don't have the Unikitty drop tower, I think.
But they do have the flying ride,
Yes.
which is a really a fun introduction for kids to a soaring type flying attraction.
No, they do have the Unikitty's disco drop.
I
They
think it
just
might
don't
be
have
the
the
splash
water
battle that
back.
they don't have.
Yes. But they do have a play area themed to Benny's play ship, a carousel, and a build zone. But they also have a crepe stand, which was also a mainstay of 2021 at the theme parks, was crepes
Everyone's
everywhere.
get everyone got a crepe stand this year. You get a crepe, and you get a crepe, and you get a crepe.
I still, crepes are great, whatever. But this was exciting to see even Legoland getting into the pandemic era opening of things. And then the long-awaited Space 220 restaurant also made its debut at Epcot. Have you had a chance to eat there yet?
Oh, heck no. I tried on multiple occasions before they were taking reservations, and there was always a crazy line. Then for a little while, you could get into the lounge without a reservation, but like literally, like you would walk up and say, "Can I wait for the lounge?" And they'd say, "No, you can't." And apparently there were empty seats up there, but they just weren't letting people up. I guess
What
they
the
wanted
heck?
people to pay full price or what. I don't know. But now even the lounge is on reservations. Every time I get a park pass to Epcot, I immediately try to get anything. And no, so I will never see the inside of that restaurant.
I think Matt's been in there,
Yep.
but I certainly have not
I've
been
heard
back
good
to.
things,
Yeah.
especially, you know, I hear the cocktails and the appetizers are good. I hear the full course meal is very expensive. I want to go just so I can see the people fighting with lightsabers out in space, because I just can't believe that that's really
I will reserve my judgments until I experience it for myself. But that is one thing I could have done without. And then our last bit of openings for the year. How could we not talk about Remy's Ratatouille Adventure at Epcot?
Yes. The one new ride that Walt Disney World actually finished and opened, which happens to be a clone of a ride that's like a decade old, but it's new to us here in Florida. And you can say what you want about it basically being a Spider-Man clone. And, you know, it's got some flaws. You can see the edges of the screens. There's some issues, but overall, it's a really charming ride. I wish you didn't have to jump through all these hoops with either getting a virtual line boarding pass or paying for an individual lightning lane. It's a bit of a pain to see it right now. But I kind of think it's worth it, at least for your first or second time through. There's a lot of really cute detail. It really captures the feel of the movie. And, you know, if you refuse to go to a Universal Park and you've never been on a Transformers or a Spider-Man, the idea of a dark ride with 3D screens will seem really innovative to you.
Yeah. I think I'll never get over when I asked you if it was... like parts of it were still in French or not.
Oh, yeah. That's the amazing thing. They don't bother subtitling or dubbing or anything. They're just like, you folks are going to learn French. They did not. They really did. The only thing that they changed from the Paris version is they took away the really wonderful restaurant at the end. But we got crepes instead. And yay crepes.
Yay crepes. And then our next chunk of remembering for the year is... obviously, like a huge one for you Halloween fans, is that we got a full proper Halloween Horror Nights at Universal Orlando and Universal Hollywood.
Halloween Horror Nights 30 2020 is dead. Long live Halloween Horror Nights 30 2021. big 30th anniversary year, and thank goodness they did not have to just do Halloween Horror Light. Like they did the previous year. You know, it was really nice of them to open at least a few houses last year and get to see them without having to pay for a Horror Nights ticket. But having the full event back, I wrote in my reviews, it was definitely not my favorite year ever. There were some really solid houses. There's some houses that just did not work for me. I think the best thing that came out of Halloween Horror Nights this year was the new Horror Nightmare Fuel dance show with pyrotechnics that they did on the Fear Factor stage, but we won't see that again because the Fear Factor stage is being torn down any day now, so we'll have to see what happens with that next year. Like I said, not my favorite year ever, but just having it back was really wonderful.
Yeah, I went to the Hollywood Horror Nights version, and while I am still a giant weenie and did not do any of the houses, everyone said that in my group said that they had a great time, that the scares were good, that the cast was on point. The only thing I would say that felt lackluster were the scare zones, but I think that's more of the geography of the park than an actual statement on like the cast or the scenery or whatever.
Yeah, I did Horror Nights Hollywood in 2019 before COVID, and I would say the scare zones were not nearly as elaborate as what we get in Orlando. It's a very different event. The design philosophy behind the houses is, I think, a lot less elaborate in a lot of ways than in Orlando, though they do great makeup and costumes out there.
Yeah.
For me, though, the best thing about Halloween Horror Nights this year was, and it was one of those turn lemons into lemonade, when Universal laid off a lot of their staff during the pandemic. Most of what we saw at Halloween Horror Nights this year was stuff that was designed a year or more ahead of time for the previous year, and a lot of the people who did those designs then lost their jobs. But it meant that we had this absolute explosion of alternative Halloween events around the Central Florida area. Two in particular, SeaWorld put on a big Hollow Scream event for the first time ever, and also Scream and Stream moved to the Oviedo Mall. And both of those were kind of spearheaded by Patrick Browyard, who was a longtime designer for Halloween Horror Nights, and lost his job, and that let him branch out and kind of put his stamp on other events around town. So, you know, the pandemic had a lot of really awful short-term effects, but I think long-term it's going to lead to the pollination of more events, more activities, more opportunities all around the region.
Yeah. He's basically the king of Halloween, lack of a better term.
Don't tell Mike Aiello that.
We're all kings of Halloween, yes, in our own hearts. But it was great to see this event come back. Even last year with the three houses that Universal Orlando opened up as like a nice little, sorry, we can't really have Halloween thing. It was mm-hmm. great to see the event back in full swing, you know, swinging for the fences, for lack of a better term.
Yep.
And then, of course, we had Walt Disney World's 50th anniversary, which some would say was lackluster, but we did get some.
I would say it was lackluster. I can be some.
I agree with you there. We did get some new offerings, though. So
we're getting things that are kind of going to be trickling out over the next 18 months. Thank goodness for Walt Disney World's sake that a year is 18 months and not 12 months, so they can drag out the celebration and give us things later on, like Guardians of the Galaxy. But, you know, for the big day on October 1st, I think, you know, especially people who snapped up those park pass reservations for the Magic Kingdom and expected some huge ceremony, some big exclusive event, kind of let down. You know, they've dressed up the parks. They created these beacons of magic on the park icons, which are a lot of fun. I especially like Spaceship Earth going through its disco ball phase.
Yes.
And, you know, we got a bunch of nighttime entertainment that honestly was all overdue and probably should have started long before the 50th anniversary if it hadn't been for COVID. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it kind of let them take a lot of things that had been delayed or promised for a long time and wrap them all up under this 50th anniversary banner. But when you compare it to what Disneyland did for their 50th anniversary or even their 60th anniversary, it felt a little underwhelming, especially when, you know, just a few weeks later going to the park for Disney Plus Day and finding that Disney Hollywood Studios did more to celebrate Disney Plus Day than Magic Kingdom did to celebrate its 50th anniversary. It felt a little cynical.
Yeah. I will say, as far as the two nighttime offerings go, mm-hmm. you can tell that one had been in development for 2+ years, mm-hmm. and the other one was thrown together in the past 6 months. And the nighttime, the Disney Enchantment Nighttime Spectacular in particular always rubbed me wrong. One, because it feels thrown together, but two, mm-hmm. it celebrates IP and not the parks.
Yes.
Like, this is the 50th anniversary Nighttime Spectacular for Magic Kingdom, mm-hmm. one of the most historic in the fabric of Americana. There are so many iconic things like Haunted Mansion, Country Bears, Peter Pan, Splash Mountain, Space Mountain, all of these things that are so iconic and so identifiable. And this nighttime show celebrates Disney characters.
My all-time favorite Disney nighttime show, if we put aside Tapestry of Nations, is Remember, the 50th anniversary fireworks from Disneyland. Because it referenced the history of the parks, it had audio clips that would just instantly provoke this kind of nostalgia when you heard them. And, you know, it kind of told the whole story of the park in a show. And the show that they've got at Magic Kingdom right now, it's fine. There's some nice use of the new projection mapping on Main Street, though not nearly as good as Disneyland Forever out in California. The letdown is that it's totally generic. It could be at any Disney park anywhere in the world, and it really doesn't say anything about what Walt Disney World has meant to the company, you know, distinct from all of their other brands.
Yeah. But I will say Harmonious, however, I watched the live stream that Disney mm-hmm. offered during one of its media nights before it officially opened, and it like brought me to tears, purely because we had Hunchback of Notre Dame representation in it, and
yes.
I think that is by far one of Disney's best musical works.
Some fairly obscure,
exactly.
Yeah, there's pretty deep cuts in there. Yeah, I mean, I. Harmonious, I enjoyed it much better than I thought. You know, it's kind of like the show itself is like a walking meme with all of those giant eyesore fountain things blocking up the view during the day. But at night, you know, you see why they need all that equipment. They do put it to pretty good use. There's nothing in the score yet that like tugs on my heartstrings the way We Go On from Illuminations did. But you know, give it 20 years and I'm sure it will lodge itself in my brain.
Yeah, I think that's what Someday, which is the Hunchback song in question that ripped my heart out, is supposed to be. And I kind of like that you chose that deep of a cut for the new like togetherness song at the end of the Epcot show.
You know, no matter what you think, we can all agree that it's better than Epcot Forever.
Oh my god, anything is better than Epcot Forever. And of course, we got Kite Tales, which went from being critically hated to being a cult favorite. There is a fan club. People love these kites.
I'm not sure whether they like them ironically or unironically. You know, that's just seeing Baloo crash land into the stadium is, you know, I think it's probably unintentionally hilarious. But if you ignore that, there's a lot of talent that went into this show, a lot of artistry, and at least they're doing something with the Rivers of Light amphitheater after they spent all that time and effort building it. You know, it's better than nothing.
Yeah, it's better than nothing. I'm still bitter. Whatever. And then we, of course, got cavalcades, all sorts of character cavalcades. And then starting in early 2022, we'll get Festival of Fantasy back from the pandemic closure. We got golden statues all across all four parks of various Disney characters. No real theme park characters, though, except for Figment, I guess. And Orange Bird. But that is another complaint for another day. I will say that the 50th, it felt more like a celebration of just Disney the brand and not the Walt Disney World Resort. But I don't know if that's something you can... I'm sure people will blame Bob Chapek for it. Yep. And I'm sure he had some say to some degree. But also it's like Disney is changing as far as synergy between the parks and how they want to represent it. And
you know, it's sad because I went to the Destination D23 event at the Contemporary a little while back that was supposed to celebrate Walt Disney World's 50th anniversary. And the stuff that was about old Disney, weird Disney, you know, digging old stuff out of the archives, the quirky old commercials and the animatronics from Horizons, that's the stuff that got the biggest reactions from the crowd. That's the stuff that people seem most interested in. You know, when they're out there promoting the latest Disney Plus product or, you know, you can just feel the energy kind of drop. You know, I think there's a hardcore audience and they've appealed to some. I think the best thing to come out is the line of Disney Vault merchandise. They've got a really cool pop-up shop at Disney Springs, you know, that kind of stuff. Maybe it's just because I'm a Gen Xer and that's what I grew up with. But you know, that's the kind of stuff that I wanted to see for the 50th anniversary and not just being promoted whatever hot new thing they've got coming out.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we all agree it could have been better, but they also had to put this on the heels of the pandemic, though the pandemic is still very much a thing.
Yep.
So some things were probably cut and shortened and lessened in order to make it possible. And I feel like we also need to curb our expectations as far as that goes too. But gosh dang it, from when the 60th happens, I swear, if it is not, you know, make me cry.
If we're still here doing this podcast on the 60th, we'll...
Oh my God, something's wrong. I'm just kidding.
No, we're going to make it to 75, darn it.
Oh my goodness. How old will I be when that happens? I don't want to think about it.
Not as old as I'll be.
Oh. And then we got some changes to the Fast Pass programs at Disneyland Paris, Disneyland Resort, and Walt Disney World Resort. To varying results, I'm sure everyone has their own opinion on it. This really started, though, in July when Disneyland Paris launched their paid Fast Pass offering. Called Premier Access.
You know, for many years, Disney was the only major chain in the theme park industry that was offering a free line skipping program like FastPass. You know, Six Flags, SeaWorld, Universal, they were all charging for this service. And Disney will never wants to leave any money on the table. So again, just like with the end of the annual pass system at Disneyland, I really think the pandemic pause gave them the perfect opportunity to try to roll out some of these new ideas. On the one hand, claiming that this is ways for guests to improve their day and have more flexibility, more choice, but on the other hand, getting themselves a new stream of revenue.
And this, we weren't sure when it was launched at Disneyland Paris that it would be coming to the US. I think it was all but assumed that it would eventually make its way to us. And it really came quite quickly, I'm gonna be on, like within months. And they announced it as Disney Genie Service as for the domestic parks. And it rolled out at Walt Disney World first, certainly not smoothly on
Nope.
either
Nope, nope,
end.
nope. And they did not learn their lesson because opening day at Disneyland was, if anything, even worse.
But the basics of Disney Genie, I'm sure you've heard it a million times, but the Disney Genie service is free. You can pay an upcharge for Disney Genie Plus, which will allow you to make FastPass reservations or FastPass-esque reservations, where you choose the next available time slot. You can pay extra to get access to rides like Rise of the Resistance or, gosh, really anything.
They really could not have made this any more complicated because they've got
Yes.
Disney Genie, they've got Disney Genie Plus, they've got Lightning Lane Disney Genie, they've got individual access Lightning Lane. It's pretty much a mess. And there's the too long didn't read version is that the free Disney Genie service is completely useless. Don't even bother because it will tell you to rush at rope drop to the carousel and then spend the next 2 hours, just looking around the park, listening to an audio guide instead of actually getting on any rides. So ignore Disney Genie. Genie Plus is a lot like Max Pass if you're used to using that at Disneyland, except it's not as useful because you can't use it for more than once on the same ride in a day, and you've got restrictions about when you can get a new one, but it can still be useful if you don't mind constantly staring at your phone, refreshing it all day to look for available time slots. And then the individual Lightning Lane, if you've only got 1 day in the park and there's something particular you want to see, just go ahead and pay for it. It's generally, if you want to see Rise of the Resistance and you have a choice between standing 2 hours in a queue or paying $20 for a Lightning Lane, your time in the park is worth more than $10 an hour. So, go for it. But it's only worth it for a handful of rides. Ratatouille, if you can't get a virtual line, go ahead. Rise of the Resistance, Flight of Passage, Avatar, but don't bother at something like Space Mountain or Expedition Everest because it's not worth the money. It's the tough part is we found all sorts of loopholes and they've been slowly changing to close all the loopholes. It's getting harder and harder to get an advantage. It is possible if you're park hopping, especially at Disneyland, to max it out and really get your money's worth. But if you're not park hopping, it can really be tough to maximize it, especially like at Walt Disney World, at Animal Kingdom or Epcot. It's hard to get your money's worth.
Yeah, I will say I mean, since I don't live near the parks anymore, I get a lot of my like guest feedback from vlogs, just watching people use the thing and talk about it. And I feel like Walt Disney World guests complain a lot more versus Disneyland people who say that it's great and it's like Max Pass because it's what they're used to.
Yeah, I mean that's people in Disneyland at first, you know, did not like the idea of Max Pass, of having to pay for something that they were getting for free with Fast Pass. And then you'd see once people used it once or twice, they would not go back.
Yeah.
And it's good that, you know, it's the same price, but you're getting less for that money. There are rides now that are excluded from it. And like I said, you can't use it more than once on the same ride. So, you know, you're paying the same and getting a little less, but it's still a fairly good deal compared to people in Walt Disney World were not used to paying at all.
Yeah. And then another big shocker for the year, I think, for a lot of people, is that Walt Disney Imagineering is in the process of, as we speak, moving all of their operations to Central Florida.
Yeah, this is a huge life change for a lot of people. Basically, if you were working out in Imagineering or the corporate offices in California, and unless your work is directly tied to the movie studios that's there in California or solely tied to the Anaheim Park, if you were doing anything that was, you know, cross-park or global, you're heading to Lake Nona, which is a lovely and soulless development on the far east side of town, where property values are now rising very sharply because of people scrambling to buy houses and move to the area. And I think it's going to be a huge cultural shift. You know, we've heard of some well-known Imagineers who have decide to turn in their you know, employee badge and quit rather than move across country. I think it could be positive for Walt Disney World in the long run, in the sense that the Imagineers who are building the rides in Disney World will now actually be here and see how things operate and see what it's like to wait in a queue when it's 99% humidity and 100 degrees out, in like it is in Orlando in August. So that could be an advantage for the Florida parks. But it's going to... I think they're gonna run the risk of losing a lot of internal institutional knowledge, because some people who have built their whole careers and families and lives out in California just not going to want to move to Central Florida. And it's hard to blame them.
Yeah. And we've seen people quit.
Yep.
You know, big, nameable.
Yep.
Imagineers and
people that they put in blog posts and you know, on making of specials, then turning around and saying I'm going. But that could also be part of it, you know. There's a huge shift going out throughout the entire themed entertainment industry, where like a whole generation of the older name brand designers are, you know, reaching retirement age and heading out. And you know, Disney and the other corporations, they see that, you know, they can hire a new generation that is younger and hungrier and willing to work for maybe less money that their predecessors were earning. So it's, you know, if you're looking to get in on the ground floor, now's the time. Polish up your resume, you know, take some classes and get your portfolio out there, because... Yeah. You know, this is going to also spawn, you've got a lot of the major third-party design companies who do the subcontracting work for Disney's and Universal's also expanding rapidly in Central Florida. So a lot of opportunity backstage if that's your career path.
Yeah. And then another exciting deal for one of a friend of the show, Banks Lee over at Legoland Florida. They are opening up a new gate called Peppa Pig Theme Park.
I was so excited that Banks invited me for the press day. I got to walk around the muddy puddles while they are still literally muddy puddles. You know, the track of the roller coaster has gone up in some of the buildings, but I got to meet Peppa Pig herself, and it made me an absolute hero to my nieces, who are the perfect age to visit this park. I'm hoping to get them down here when it opens early next year. You know, it's barely a theme park in sense of size or number of attractions. You know, it's about the size of a land in a larger theme park, but it's going to make a really great companion to Legoland. And I think for the kids that this is aimed at, it's going to feel huge.
Yeah. I actually just got a text from Banks earlier that they released a POV or a rendering Ooh. Of the Daddy Pig roller coaster. I'm yes. sure that's, is that its name?
Yes, each attraction is themed around a different character, and the big, I would say the E-ticket, but it's really more of like an A-ticket, is a cute little, you know, baby's first roller coaster themed after Daddy Pig.
Yes. All of the team members are model citizens, I suppose, since this is a Legoland adjacent park, will be named Puddle Jumpers, which I think is adorable. This is a great park for kids preschool age that aren't quite up to the Legoland level yet, but still allow them the chance to experience attractions, ride their first roller coaster maybe, or their first like flying what would you call the balloon ride, like a flying carousel type ride?
I mean, it's they're all very gentle. None of these is really any more thrilling than Dumbo. But you know, kids today don't necessarily know who Dumbo is. They definitely know who Peppa Pig is.
Yes, for sure. She has beef with everyone on the internet. And then our last bit of looking back at 2021, Disney Cruise Line is going to have an insane ship on their hands when it sets sail next summer with the Disney Wish. This thing has so much stuff packed on it, and I feel like they add new things in press releases every other week. I swear. It's, you know, unbelievable.
I've been a big fan of Disney cruise ships ever since my first cruise with them years ago. And my heart personally is still on the Disney Magic, because I did a transatlantic sailing on that, and once you spend almost 2 weeks on a boat, you kind of feel like it's home. But if anything would make me cheat on the Magic, it would be the Disney Wish, because every new reveal that they've had about a different space on this boat has just been like, yeah, I need a week, I need 2 weeks, I need 3 weeks on this boat just to explore everything. I also really want to be a kid again, because kids have, I think, the coolest kids play spaces I have ever seen on any cruise ship. One that is Star Wars themed that looks more fun than anything that is at Galaxy's Edge or maybe even the Galactic Star Cruiser. And an Imagineering lab where kids are going to get to design their own rides and ride simulated attractions. That's something that I've been wanting to come back ever since Disney Quest died.
Yes.
All these things make me really jealous that I'm not 12 years old.
And even on top of these offerings, they have things like themed bars and lounges. Mm-hmm. One is going to be a Star Wars themed bar where you can see ships and planets go by in the portholes, and a whole Moana themed suite inside one of the funnels, which is insane to me.
And the price on that one is also insane. You know, the one thing that is included for everyone is the main dining restaurants, which have always been really good on the Disney ships. And they introduced, like at the Animator's Palette on some of the other ships, some entertainment. Now they've taken it to a whole new level where each restaurant is basically a dinner theater. So you have a Frozen dinner that is basically a musical dinner theater with songs being performed around you. And a Marvel-themed experience where you basically participate in a superhero adventure while eating dinner. Really taking the level of entertainment and, you know, the plating of the food and the theming of the food to a new level.
Yeah. And then, of course, we also have the Aquamouse.
Yes.
As well. Yes, the roller coaster at sea. Yeah. Our dark ride at sea, where you take your...
I really enjoyed the Aqua Duck, which is on some of the other ships. It's what they call a water coaster, where they use blasts of water or magnetism to launch your raft uphill. But this is the first time that they have fully themed out one of these on a boat. So you've going to go past screens featuring Mickey Mouse cartoons in the style of the animated Mickey Mouse series. And there's actually even two different versions of it. So depending on what time of day you ride, you'll have two different adventures.
Yeah. Can't wait to see more of that. We've really only seen concept art for that so far, though the ship is still being put together. I think the last I saw of the ship was it being literally welded together.
It's enormous, and it's a massive project, but it's going to be launching before you know it.
Yeah, summer 2022. And, you know, if it is successful, as I'm sure it probably will be, this could really change the landscape for what people expect when going on a Disney cruise. And maybe we could see some retroactive additions to other ships to kind of integrate these offerings, like the augmented reality game thing. You know, the possibilities are endless, and I'm so excited to see it.
I hope I someday get to sail on it myself.
Me too.
Disney, if you're listening, I will happily accept a press cruise. I will be totally objective, I promise.
What if we did a podcast from the ship?
Wouldn't that be nice? Well, the Wi-Fi at sea is not great, but we can try it.
Yeah, well, listen, hey Disney, if you offer it, we will try our darndest. But that is our 2021 year in review, and we actually took a little bit longer with that than I had anticipated. But
it was a big year. We had a lot to talk about.
And before we say our goodbyes to you, I want to get in a quick word from our sponsor, our friends at Destinations with Character Travel.
Here at Destinations with Character Travel, we offer the best experience with your travels. Need to visit the thrilling Disneyland Resort, Walt Disney World? Maybe lounge about on a Disney cruise or any other major cruise line? No problem. So if you're looking for a stress and hassle-free vacation, visit us at www.destinationswithcharacter.com. Contact us today and let us plan a magical vacation for you and your family.
And since we have no listener thank yous to share, Seth, I will let you take us out.
Yes. Well, thank you once again to Destinations with Character Travel. Please, everyone, while you are sitting around during this holiday season, if you're bored, take just a couple minutes to head on over to Apple Podcasts and give us a 5-star rating. Give us a review. And please make sure you follow us the rest of this year and for all of 2022 on social media and the internet. You can find me and my books at theunofficialguides.com. And you can find me on Twitter at the UG Series or at the Unofficial Guides on Instagram. And Brittany, where can they find you?
You can find me at Brittany Tuttle. That's BRITTANITUTTLE. Yes, it's spelled funny on Twitter and Instagram, but also every day at attractionsmagazine.com, at attractions on Twitter, at attractions magazine on Instagram, at attractions on TikTok, and youtube.com/attractionsmagazine, where you've been hanging out with us for I don't know how long it's been, because we're recording 3 episodes back to back. So
don't tell them the secrets.
It's not actually live. And until next week, I hope you guys stay safe, try something new, but most importantly, have fun, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.